Digging through the past is not that hard. Rusted cars and broken shards. Mining memories in an old wrecking yard. Echoes of laughter, whispers of pain. Time stands still, but the memories remain. In this graveyard of steel.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. Of course, we just always ask to show up with an open heart. Hope you guys are doing well today on your Sunday, Saturday for me. Haven't done much except write this whole episode today. Well, I went to the gym. I had a hell of a leg day. I got it in this morning. Feeling pretty good about that. Also managed to break my little air conditioner. Broke the whole face off of it on accident. Got it caught on a crack in the sidewalk and tumped it right over on its face. That's a technical term. It's been tumped. Broken. Now air is just blowing all willy-nilly. But you know what? It still puts out cold air. So I suppose that's good enough for me. Ed went to the gym this morning. Really busted it. Feel great. Got this all wrote today. Actually worked on the book a lot today. Worked on the book a lot yesterday. But we're kind of getting into the final stages where we need everything to look like it's going to look. And mostly at this point, I'm just writing transitions, and me and the editor are cutting everything out, me and Adam. And but I'm enjoying working with Adam. He's a good dude. The more I get to know about the guy, the more I like him. Like, man, I think we might have just been friends regardless. Good guy. I feel like we have some similar values. Not to say we agree on everything, but I hadn't found much we've disagreed on. Ooh, man. Feel good, though. I hope you guys are feeling good. My weight just keeps dropping, you know. I keep sticking to the plan, keeping those calories down, watching what I'm putting in my body. Still treat myself every now and then, but, you know, it's treats that I'm thoughtful about, and I'm thoughtful about those calories and stuff like that. As you can imagine, so I've been doing the internet and the social media stuff for quite a while now, at least, say, probably 3 years, 2 or 3 years now I've been doing this. And if you can imagine, over those years, a lot of beard oil and beard balm companies have reached out to me and wanted to do collaborations, wanted to send me product to try, wanted me to talk about their product and this and that kind of stuff. And I've had some good ones over the years. One of my favorite ones I've ever had, I don't know, even know the guy that makes it, but my buddy Jody up in Tennessee sent it to me. Somebody up in Tennessee made it. And it's one of the better oils I've ever used. Really, it's one of those oils that smell, it actually smells like old leather. It doesn't smell like it's trying to smell like old leather. It actually smells like old leather. And I enjoyed that one. But a lot of the products, by and large, have been fairly unremarkable. You know, I could just do just as well by going to the grocery store and buying something off the shelf at the grocery store. And in fact, I use that Duke Cannon, I think it is, beard balm for quite a while. And a lot of times I would just take coconut oil and mix it up with a little peppermint oil, and that was good enough, you know. But you got to be careful with peppermint oil, it can dry out your beard. And a while back, a company called, a company called Outlaws and Gents Grooming Company out of San Antonio. Reached out right over the Faulkner video. He saw my beard in the Faulkner video. He didn't know anything about me. He's like, man, it's a good looking beard. He reached out and talked to my management a little bit, and he sent me an incredible container full of products and to try out, man, and see if I liked them. And I have had this is the best my beard and mustache has looked in, I bet, 10 years, you know? Like, I've been using them, though, and using them according to their directions, using the oil and stuff. Like, he's got a real nice oil. I hadn't tried all of them yet. There's a bunch of different scents and stuff. But the one I really like is there's one that's called clove and orange oil. And I really like the way it makes my skin feel underneath. You know, if you got a beard, you get a little scratchy under there. And then there's a beard butter that you use on top of that. And there's one in there, it's called tobacco and vanilla. And it has got, it's just that and that clove oil and the orange oil. Really, it's a really, my wife calls it layering scents, but which sounds kind of frou-frou to me, but they do go well together. She's been crazy about the way I smell, on, at least in the face area, you know. I've been enjoying it, man. It's making my stuff look real good, man. It was feeling a little dried out, a little wispy. And we're all getting older. We're all aging. Your beard's going to dry out. Your hair's going to dry out. But you don't have to be in a rush for that to happen. I don't remember. It's so funny to me when I hear people make jokes about people doing stuff like that. And I don't do nothing there. I don't do nothing this. I don't do nothing that. And it always makes me laugh. Like is taking care of yourself not manly? I don't know, man. I enjoy things that make my skin, my body feel good. Your skin's like, I think, I'm probably wrong about this, but I'm just going to say it and be wrong. I think your skin is your biggest organ. And I never took care of my skin growing up. It was sunburnt, da-da-da-da, and then I had a little scare earlier this year, and I had to go get some stuff checked out and looked at. And thankfully, everything was Hakuna Matata. Nothing was any of those scary words. But it made me start paying a little more attention to what I was doing to take care of myself. I'm trying to fix my body in the gym. I'm working on my health in that way. I've worked on my diet. I've changed my diet up a lot. I'm doing a lot of things for myself that way. Why shouldn't I be taking care of my skin? And why shouldn't I take care of my hair and my beard? I'm 48 years old. Got a full head of hair. Ain't got no interest in rushing that away. When the time comes, I'll deal with it as I see fit. But until then, I'm going to enjoy it. Man, that's been nice. That's really, feels good. Feels good, smells good. That's nice, too. It's all natural stuff, too, which I like. Anyways, dude's got some good stuff. It's first product that's caught my eye in a while. And like I said, people send it to me all the time. I try all kinds of stuff. I've done different regimens, tried a lot of different products. You know, they're all branded Viking something or other. And most of them, by and large, unremarkable. But this particular little group of products I've been using recently, I'm really enjoying. I think me and this gentleman may end up doing some business together because I actually really, really like his product. That's not an ad. You'll know what I'm doing in an ad because I'll tell you. That's just a little small talk to start the day, man. I'm feeling kind of chatty. I've been holed up the last couple of days working on the book and stuff and kind of off of my own world and have not been communicating much outside. I have just one particular friend I've been texting in the evenings who's going through some trials and a little concerned for him. So outside of that, I've just been holed up at this house. Working on this, trying to move this thing forward. I'm excited about it, but it's you have to temper your excitement when you're working on something that has long deadlines and long. It's a new experience for me. Usually, everything's get it done, get it ready, get it made, get it put out right now. And this is the thing. It's like, well, we're going to spend a lot of time making it, and then we're going to spend a lot of time fixing that, and then we're going to spend a lot of time marketing it. And then we're going to get it out. You know, it's a different game for me. It's a different environs, if you will, that I'm having to tackle here. And usually when I do get into something like that, I have to find things that give me quick gratification. in order to help me stay balanced, you know. So you may see me putting out a lot of content right now. I've got a lot of ideas. My brain's overflowing recently. And I've learned some new tricks to speed up my productivity. And that's helped me a lot. I've gotten in an effort, because we know we're about to go into this boot camp, getting this book done, that's going to require some long nights and some long days. An effort for me to make some, problem is when I go off into a project like that, then other things fall through, housework and washing my clothes, all these other little things, they kind of fall out. I've never been diagnosed as ADHD, but I'd be damn surprised if I wouldn't get a diagnosis as ADHD. I'm not interested in medication, all that kind of stuff. I don't want anything screwing with who I am, what I'm doing, but some people have had good results from it. It just doesn't feel like the right choice for me. But when I get too wrapped up in a project like that, everything else falls to the wayside, my fitness and all that kind of stuff. So in an effort to combat that ahead of time, this time me and my wife sat down and spent some time compartmentalizing my days and helping me kind of schedule my days out. And it's helping me a lot better stay on track. If I know I got to devote this much time to this and this much time to this, then it helps me plan and do things better. Only thing that's been screwing me lately has been the weather. I feel like it has rained and thunderstormed every day this week. And I've got this sketch. It's some of you guys probably watch the Shop Talk sketches I do. I've got this Shop Talk sketch I wrote right after my cats got killed about Papa and Dad and brother and uncle. And I wanted to film this sketch, and I have not had a cut. There's part of it I got to film outside, and I hadn't had a day worth of damn to do it, you know. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, tomorrow on Sunday, won't get no rain, I can get out there and finish filming that sketch. Wait too much longer to finish filming this sketch, I'm going to have to film the inside part again, because all three of them are going to lose weight when they go outside. That's how long I've been waiting to film the rest of the sketch. So, hoping, against hope, that tomorrow is a better weather day and I can get around to doing that. Next weekend, I'm going to be in San Antonio. I got two nights of shows in San Antonio at the Upscale Comedy Lounge. I always want to call it the Upstage Comedy Lounge. That's what that's actually what it is. I always want to call it the Upscale Comedy Lounge, but it's actually the Upstage Comedy Lounge. I got two shows to do out there, and we're going to do a meet and greet Saturday. If you're in the San Antonio area, you want to come hang out, I'm going to be over at the Arctic Ape. Frozen Desserts right over there on Walsham Road, right by the club, hanging out with my good buddy RJ Witcher, who started the Arctic Ape. Really good dude, Michelin level chef that decided to start an ice cream shop with his folks, or custard shop with his folks. And they make some good stuff. They're fun people. And that, not only that, they do a lot for other people. RJ started called Cigars for Warriors project, where he gets cigars and sends them to soldiers overseas, you know, and it's a cool thing. The whole time I was in Africa, I was bumping into guys that had his cigars from the Cigars for Warriors program. On top of that, him and his wife Abigail, along with the Arctic Ape Frozen Shop, do all kind of stuff for the San Antonio Zoo and for the animals over there. And they're just real good people, man. I'm just delighted to know them and to be their friend. And I'm going to go hang out at their ice cream shop. If you, like I said, are in the San Antonio area, we got a little free time, we'll come by and chit chat. We'll be there. We're going to do a big car show, but we just didn't get enough entries to make that work. And honestly, I just didn't feel good about trying to promote a car show after all the flooding stuff happened, and it seemed a little tone deaf, and so we decided to knock the car show in the head, and we're going to try that again at a later date, Diamond Jim Shine Off, but it's not going to be happening next weekend. Whew. All right. Do a little sponsor copy. You got a business or a brand, you're looking to get it in front of real folks who actually listen, I want to help you do that. I reckon your art is one of the fastest growing shows out there right now. Averaging 8 to 10,000 downloads a week with 11% engagement. And honestly, I think that's up to almost 13% engagement right now. We're on every major podcast platform, broadcast live and video on YouTube. And the folks that tune in, they're loyal, sharp, and they show up for honest stories from the Southern Piney Woods, lessons from the junkyard, and some raw, hilarious self-reflection that you don't often get in many podcasts these days. Seems like most podcasts are spending their efforts making fun of other people. When I talk about a product I believe in, people generally pay attention. And right now, we got sponsor spots open. Your name, your logo, even your hat or your shirt, front and center on a podcast. It's already signed a book deal and been optioned for TV and film. That sounds like you're kind of right. Email jwlcomedy@gmail.com and let's grow together. I believe all ships rise. That is my mantra. Today we're talking about one of my favorite little pickups I ever owned in my life. It was 1994, or possibly 1993. To be honest, I don't really remember. And when I owned that truck, I had a flip phone. I don't have any photos from that time, just blurry flip phone photos. But you know, there's always a space in life that doesn't always get a lot of attention. And that space is the middle ground. Between big, small, between flash and function, between wanting everything and needing just enough. And if there was ever a truck built for that space, it was the Dodge Dakota. It was a truck born in necessity. Back in the early 80s, we've talked about it. We'll talk about it some more. Chrysler's fighting to stay alive. Times are tight. Interest rates were sky high, and the company needed smart ideas that wouldn't break the bank, right? We know that's when they come up with the minivan. But then they came up with something no other American automaker was really building at the time and wouldn't for some time, a mid-sized pickup, and they called it the Dakota. It was bigger than the compacts, S10s, the Toyotas, the Rangers. But not near as massive and thirsty as full-size Ram or F-150. It sat in that in-between space. And for a whole lot of folks, that was exactly what they was looking for. First generation rolled out for the 1987 model year. And that first gen ran all the way through 1996, nearly a decade. It was a truck born out of practicality. Chrysler kept costs down once again, same way they did with their minivans, by borrowing parts from other vehicles in their lineup. The Dakota was even built in the same factory as full-size Dodge D/W series trucks. But despite sharing space and components, it was something new. It was the first pickup truck in America to offer rack and pinion steering, at least in the two-wheel drive models. That might sound small today, but back then it made the Dakota feel a little more car-like behind the wheel, more precise, a bit smoother over rough roads. Under the hood, they kept it simple. The Dakota come out, you can choose an inline 4 or a V6. It comes with a 5-speed manual, 3-speed automatic. 4-wheel drive was only offered with the V6 in the early years. But then Chrysler got a little crazy, decided to throw that 5.2 liter V8 in there. And that's where the Dakota really began to stand apart. Because suddenly this little middle-sized pickup truck put down some real power. Wasn't a full-size brute, but it could tow, it could haul, and it could surprise you on the highway. few years in, Dodge adds the, what do they call it, sport package. For folks who wanted their Dakota just to stand out a bit more. Bright colors, red, black, white, black grills and bumpers, aluminum wheels, tape stripes running down the sides, a little go-to-hell pinstripes. Inside, you get you, I think it was like charcoal silver cloth interior, but it come with a leather-wrapped steering wheel, upgraded gauges. Even had a little Mopar air dam with Bosch fog lights on. They added some audio options, you know, shit that felt high-tech back then, AM, FM, cassette, Venture CD. It was still a practical truck, but now it looked good, you know. It looked a little sporty. That Chrysler, like, they were having fun with this little pickup. You could tell they were, because they did something that I swear nobody saw coming. They made a Dakota convertible. Like, I've seen people take little mini trucks and make convertibles out of them, but the Dakota's the only one ever come from the factory with a convertible. It had a fixed roll bar and a manual soft top. The idea came from a dude named Jerry York, who was an executive that thought it would sell good, and he'd later go work for Apple and make Apple all kind of money. Coach work, of course, was done by ASC, American Sunroof Company. They made 2,400 convertibles in the first year, and then I think by the last year, they only made about eight. Just eight trucks total. The Dakota convertible was one of those vehicles that didn't fit any mold. Part-time truck, part open-air cruiser. Folks didn't know what to make of it, man. I mean, some folks, it was perfect. A little piece of freedom truck. It felt like summer. I've had the opportunity to run around one of those little convertible Dakotas, and it's a good-ass time. It's like taking a Blazer and taking the top off. Except it's a little smaller, a little quicker, gets around a little better. The one I went and rode around in, so they come with that 318, but the one I went to go ride around in with a buddy of mine one day had a 30, they had put a 360 in it, well, Magnum 360 in it. And that little pickup would scoot. If the convertible was the oddball, the Shelby Dakota was the muscle. Carroll Shelby, of course, the man behind Cobra, performance legends, turned his attention to the Dodge Dakota in 1989. He was doing all kinds of stuff for Chrysler. You may have seen one of those old, was it a Plymouth Laser? There's a Plymouth Laser and a Dodge Daytona. They made a Shelby version of that thing too. And a little gal I knew in high school had one. And let me tell you, that little 2.2 turbocharged Shelby Daytona, well, paired with that five, from red light to red light, you couldn't hardly catch that little car. That little car would spook and scoot, son. When Shelby went to the Dakota, he ran 5.2 liter V8 under the hood. Gave a unique look, subtle graphics, little numbered plaque. It wasn't the fastest thing that Shelby ever put his name on, but it gave the Dakota a little attitude. Prove that the Dakota could be more than just a little work truck. It'd be something special. In 1990, they introduced a club cab. Still just two doors, but offered a back seat. It was not a big back seat, though. That's about the only thing that back seat was good for, kids, dogs, and groceries. But it meant you could try to carry your family around in Dakota. It pushed it just a little further towards being a do-everything truck. Go to work, go to the beach, take the kids to school, go camping, pull some loads with it. I mean, you could do some stuff with these little pickups, man. 1991, they changed up the face. New grill, new hood design for easier engine access. Got rid of the old seal beam headlights. Replaced by molded the plastic units, look a little more modern. It's just enough detail that you can always tell a 91 from a 89 or a 90, you know. You walk through a parking lot, you can see the front end of that 91, you can tell the that it's won after that year. '92, Chrysler decided to give it a little new life under the hood. Both the 3.9 liter V6 and the 5.2 liter V8 were upgraded to Magnum specs. Meant more horsepower, better throttle response, and smoother operation. The V8 was pushing about 230 horsepower. I think the V6 was about 180. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's about 180 horsepower. Suddenly, Dakota wasn't just a middle-sized option. You know, it was a real performer, capable of doing serious work or just making your daily commute a little more fun. Now, I've driven a handful of them, got them V8s in them, and they're just a ball. It is the perfect little pickup, man. You get one of those that V8 in, that's a fun little truck to drive. Mine had six, and it was still a great little pickup. Trucks were changing in the 90s, though. We know that. We know everybody's designs are changing. Safety was becoming more important. Comfort on the inside was becoming more important. And Dodge kind of led the way on that. 94, they started adding airbags. Trim levels were changed up. They went to the same trim levels as Ram pickup, so your SLT was at the top end. Features kept getting better. They started putting alloy wheels, even on the base model truck, better sound systems. Leather seats got available for them. You get a CD player or a combo unit, had cassette and CD, which that was, you were shitting in high cotton back in if you had that little setup. I remember when those first come out. 96 is the final year of the first generation Dakota. They didn't really do much in 96. I think they already knew they had another idea they were working on. It was right after 96 when they started looking like the bigger Dodges. Only thing in 96, they got rid of the old K-Car 2.5 liter four-cylinder. And they replaced that with the AMC 2.5 inline four, like you found some old Jeeps. Not exactly a thrilling engine, but a better fit for a truck that size. A lot torquier. It's better. I had a 91 with a 2.2 in it, and that thing wouldn't pull a greasy string out of a cat's ass. It was a fun little truck to drive, but you couldn't have pulled a trailer with it. Of special note, before we jump out of the technical side of this, is before the first generation disappeared entirely, there were a few unique chapters. A company called LER Industries built step-side bed versions of the Dakota with two special editions. They made a Little Red Express Dakota, which tried to capture the spirit of the old 78, 79 Little Red Express trucks. Even had the dual vertical exhaust stacks behind the cab, though they were purely decorative. And then they made one called, and I've never seen one of these. I've seen the Little Red Express Dakotas. I've never seen one. It's called the Dakota Warrior, but it was modeled after the Warlock truck from the late 70s. Shared the same step-side bed, but skipped the exhaust stacks. Oh, boy, I wouldn't mind seeing one of those because I love them Warlocks. Those Warlocks were some of my favorite pickups Dodge ever made. Production numbers were real small, just a few hundred trucks. And some of them were even equipped when they built these trucks with the 360 Magnum V8. But, boy, have you found one of those today? Those are rare finds anymore. Quiet little echoes of Mopar history that most people don't even know existed. Mopar's got lots of them. Mopar, Chrysler, this is the thing I'll say about Chrysler, man. Chrysler was never afraid to change crap up right in the middle of a series of trucks. They were never afraid to put out special editions, never afraid to mess with power plants. They were very brave when it came to that. And I always like the Dakota was a truck that lived in the middle. Not too big, not too small. Practical enough for hauling lumber, helping your buddy move a couch. but enough power, especially in the Magnum V8 years, to remind you it wasn't afraid to run. It wasn't always flashy, it wasn't always perfect, but it fit the lives of a whole lot of folks who wanted something versatile. It was a truck that could work all week, and you still take it out on Saturday night feeling pretty good about yourself. In a world that we live in, likes to push everything towards the biggest or the smallest, the loudest or the quietest, Coda just held its ground right there in the middle. And sometimes that's exactly where a pickup truck belongs. I remember the day I bought my Dakota. Well, I've owned two of them, but the very first one I had, I bought from Uncle Bobby when I was in high school. It was a 91. It had the 2.2 and 5-speed in it. It was a decent little pickup. I cratered the transmission in it on graduation day. I think I probably told y'all this story. I was on my way to graduation at the high school, and I cratered that little 5-speed. I had been rough with that little truck. I used to take it off-road and run it up and out in the country and shit. I was rough on that truck. I jumped that pickup a couple times, you know. It didn't feel like a forever truck to me. Y'all have heard the story. My dad bought it from me, and I took that money and was going to buy the El Camino with it until Papa found out that Granny was trying to sell his El Camino while he was in the hospital. And Papa just ended up giving me the El Camino for free, and I spent that $500 my daddy gave me for that Dakota fixing up that old El Camino and getting the El Camino running. Me and my editor, buddy Adam, I'm just going to start calling him Adam. Y'all know Adam is my developmental editor. It's working with me on the book. Good ass dude. Adam, I'll serve your name. Good ass dude. But we have a lot of wild conversations about this stuff. He knows cars, and we talk about this stuff. And he mentioned to me how funny it was that he was telling somebody a story about how he bought a car from his mom, or his mom sold him a car one time. And they're like, oh, so your mom bought you a car? And he's like, no. And we were talking about how funny it is, especially here in the South, but I think mostly in rural families. And I think probably a lot when you get overseas is cars kind of have sometimes, for lack of a better word, incestuous timelines, you know. Just about every car I ever bought somebody in my family had already been owned by several members of my family. My little Mustang was owned by everybody in the family at one point. Granny even had it for a little while, and then my younger sister finished it off. That Datsun 280Z came into my family because my cousin Amy, her first husband, drug it from Arizona, right? And then my Uncle Larry bought it from him, and it sat in my Uncle Larry's yard for a little while. And then my dad bought it from my Uncle Larry, and then I ended up buying it from my dad. You know, there's just a lot of that. It's not necessary. It's not the same thing as somebody buying you a car or giving you a car, which I've had happen a couple of times. But, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, oh, man, my cousin driving a car, I like a car. Boy, and then your cousin gets around, gets, oh, I think I'm going to sell that old car. You start going, well, hell, man, I might like the way I look driving that old car, you know. I keep threatening. My cousin Shane has that Camaro still. Okay. Boy, if he ever sells it, I'm going to be the first one over there trying to buy the damn thing. If I got any money by then. The way things are going, I'm not 100% sure I will. Whew. Feels a little tight this month. That's all right. This happens to me in the summer. Summer is our low money month. People aren't really going to comedy shows much. There's too much fun stuff to do outside and all that kind of thing. Which is weird. When I was a contractor and, you know, doing contract work and stuff like remodeling and stuff, December to January was my worst 2 months, you know, because December, everybody's got scared money because they're worried about Christmas. And then January, everybody's worried about the tax man and the weather's crap. And those are my worst months. Really, December through February was my worst months when I was doing that kind of work. The comedy is completely the opposite, man. From about October to February, everything's golden for me. But when the weather starts warming up and everything, it gets a little more difficult. Anyways, I had bought that little pickup from Uncle Bobby, and then of course sold it to my father. And I don't remember what my dad did with it. He might have sold it to one of my cousins. I don't remember what he did with that little pickup. But back in about 2009, y'all have heard a lot of stories about this. Me and Rachel was living in Spring, Texas. In fact, we had just moved to Spring. We just moved in that little house. So I was pretty much working out of that little Honda Accord. I've been using that little Honda Accord to work out of. But this is the time period when old Big Country, old Roy Wilkerson, that's about the time he turned that contract over to me and said, you take this contract, this would be a good way for you to build your business up, start your business. He knew I had ambition. It was probably 2009, maybe March or so. That contract come with a big old raise in pay from what I was making, but it was also come with an immediate need for me to go buy pressure washers and paint sprayers and equipment. I needed compressors. I didn't have Roy's equipment to use anymore. He took all his equipment back to his business so that he could focus on his business. And I had replaced skill saw, all that stuff, saws and, from what little meager tool collection I had at the time. I needed to buy everything I was going to need to keep up with the whole yearly maintenance contract. I'm trying to remember how many units we out there. I guess we probably had about 400 units. 400 units, all three-story buildings. So I had to buy extra long ladders, all that kind of stuff, Roof and nailers, I forgot what you call it, fence and nailer, I had to go purchase all that crap. Drills and all that impact stuff. And it's a lot. It's a lot of money you had to put out. On top of that, I knew I was going to need a way to haul all that stuff around. And the bottom line is that little Honda Accord just wasn't going to cut it anymore. I couldn't pull a trailer with it or anything. I had a little small trailer I bought from my dad. I had one of them little Lowe's, like a 5x8 trailer or something. My parents had bought it for something, used it for a couple of years. Decided they was going to get rid of it. I didn't even have anything to pull it with when I bought it. My dad had to bring it over the house. They were selling it so cheap, I didn't want to see it. They paid about $800 for it. They were selling it for $400. And I thought, boy, I'm probably not going to find me another $400 trailer. I'll go ahead and snatch that $400 trailer. That trailer now, I believe, is in its permanent residence in my buddy Terry Smart Jr.'s backyard. I gave it to him eons ago. And I don't know if he ever did anything with it. I told him he could have it. He was a good friend. He was a good hand. I didn't have a lot of money to give him when he was left my company to go back to work with his father. And I just wanted to put some stuff in his hands that I knew he'd use. He was a good hand. Terry Smart Jr. is one of the better men I've known in my life. I'd also decided at the same time that, while I was doing this little contract job during the week, I was going to start me a little remodeling company. In the beginning, it was going to be a fencing company. And I did like three fence jobs and lost my ass on them. I spent way too much time trying to build a perfect fence, and people in Montgomery County weren't looking for perfect. They didn't care about rot boards and shit like that. They just wanted cheap ass builder's fence put up, and they worry about that shit in 3 or 4 years when it rotted, but they didn't want to spend money on putting nice rot board down and, a well-constructed fence. That wasn't what they was about. Unless it was the uber rich people, and they were going to do business in a guy in a radio truck and that kind of stuff. They were kind of snotty about that. Took me a while to figure all that out. But back then, Craigslist was the place to go. In those days, I used to just, out of reflex, maybe just my papa in me, I would just spend hours. That used to be my favorite thing to do, scour Craigslist. I'd sit there. Me and Rachel would sit on the couch, watch a movie or something, and I'd have my laptop open, and I'd be combing through Craigslist for deals. Deals I probably wasn't ever going to buy, but I just like knowing those out there, and I could if I wanted to. I bought a lot of used equipment off of Craigslist. Air compressors, things like that. My paint spray, my buddy David, y'all know him, David Doig. David gave me my very first paint sprayer, and I've owned about 15 since then, but it was this monstrous old, it was probably 25 years old, Graco paint sprayer. It was the biggest one they made, and I found out later on that, I mean, you could spray block sealant, block filler, everything you wanted with this paint sprayer. It was a big old hoss. I didn't know anything about paint sprayers. I'd used a few. I knew how to, you know, set my gun and spray, but I didn't know anything about paint sprayers themselves. I didn't know about how they worked or anything like that. First time he found this, he bought a shop. I think he bought a shop. This one of his transmission shops was going to be. He bought this old shop, and it was in the back of that old shop. He didn't know anything about it. Gave it to me. Maybe he sold it to me. I don't know, David. I didn't know anything about paint sprayers. First time I tried to use it, I was going to try to paint this pool fence. The fence went around the swimming pool out there at April Point South. And I went and bought a bunch of high-dollar black enamel paint. And I prepped the fence, sanded it, did all that stuff. Made me a little a piece of plywood on two legs that I could walk behind the fence. I could spray it without getting overspray in the pool or all over the grass. And I could just move that piece. Put a lot of thought into how I was going to paint this fence. And then I hooked that paint sprayer up and stuck it in the paint. And I didn't know the pump tube gaskets were bad. And when that thing primed, it blew black enamel paint all over me, the fence, the pool house, and everything else in the general 20-foot vicinity. So damn mad. Boy, I bet I cussed up a blue streak. I think it took me weeks to get black paint off me in places. Oh, that was that good enamel, too. I was taking a bath and paint thinner trying to get it off me. Luckily, there was a little shop on 1960 back in. Rebuilt them. It's called Painter's Repair. One of my buddies told me about it, and they rebuilt the whole thing for $150 after I, of course, took it all apart and screwed it up royalty. I you know, same way we always do. Oh, I'll figure out what's wrong with this 750. I started taking that thing apart in my garage, and I had it in about 32 different pieces, and I couldn't remember where none of them went. I took that thing in a box over there at Painter's Repair. I remember... He said, I wheeled the sprayer in there. They wheeled the first box, had all the big parts of the sprayer. And then I had a little box, had all the little springs. Because there's all kind of little pieces in there. I don't know what any of them do. Little gaskets and bullshit. And I had the big box sitting on top of the sprayer. I wheeled that in the shop. And the old boy behind the counter was sort of thumbing through the box. And where's the rest of it? And I pulled out that little box. I said, don't sneeze. And I had that little box. He goes, boy, you was really trying to figure something out, wasn't you? I said, hell yeah, I was. I said, I thought I was going to take it apart, put it back together, make it work. I got it apart. And I couldn't remember how to get it back together. And by God, I couldn't find no instructions nowhere on the interwebs. He rebuilt that thing for me. It worked pretty good. Anyway, I'm getting off track here. I dove off into Craigslist, you know. The job came with a raise, but I hadn't seen any of it yet. And it was the way it was structured, it was a contract. So I only got paid, you know, like once a month in the beginning. So I had, I remember I had about $700 find me a pickup truck. And I spent a few days calling folks up and then going to look at some poorly described train wreck. Don't get me wrong, $700 went a lot farther on a vehicle then, but folks have been lying about what condition their car is in since the first caveman tried to sell a wheel. I can see that now. Rock wheel for sale, one owner, no accidents. Rolled when parked. Contact garage, third cave on the right, past the tar pits. No low ballers. I know what I got. Come on, Grog. We all see the chip missing from the edge of that wheel. Whole tribe knows you hit a mammoth last winter, and don't tell me it's patina. Old Grog be over there talking about rare color combo, original granite on granite. Every time you ask for a better price, bro, try finding another one like this. They don't make them anymore. Yeah, because we invented round wheels, Grog. That's why. Don't need nothing except four new logs and a solid prayer to the sun god, Grog. Folks, whether it's a rock wheel or a 2008 Dodge Avenger, one thing's never changed. People always know what they got, even when what they got ain't worth a tinker's damn. One Saturday morning, though, I was scanning the Craigslist and I seen it. 94 Dakota. I remember the ad said, rubs and drives. 238,000 miles, $600, and there's this picture of a very dirty two-tone green and gray club cab Dakota. It looks like it's been sitting under that same pine tree for 30 years. Well, I called that old boy right away. Dude that answered the phone sounded like he was straight out of Deep East Texas, like he had eaten gravel and Marlboros for breakfast. This country's, yeah, I still got it. A couple folks looked at it, but ain't had no takers. He gives me the address. It's up in this little community called Seven Coves. Now, Seven Coves today ain't what Seven Coves was back in 2009. Seven Coves is a part of Willis, Texas, but it's this old community on the northeast, like the north end of Lake Conroe. I think it was started in the 70s, like a little lake community. But in 2009, it was mostly just trailer houses. It was mostly folks that didn't have no money. Nowadays, a whole bunch of it's been developed. You know, be that good lakefront property. But back then, it was just more broke folks out in the sticks. Rachel and I, we hopped into Mazda same Saturday morning. I just got off phone with him. I said, I want to go look at this truck. Me and her hopped into Mazda. We run up there. It was about 40 miles north of where we lived at the time in the spring. Now, the part of the Seven Coves his address took us to was mostly trailer houses and not new, old ones. Old with the crazy trim and stuff from like the 70s and the 80s when they was trying to really church them trailer houses up. You know what they look like. And every one of them either had a cobbled together, like sort of makeshift extra roof over the top of them. You know, if things start leaking, once they start leaking, they're done. And so this is what my people would do too up in East Texas. They build this fake roof over their trailer house. And that gets you 7 more years out of a trailer house. Build a good fake roof, put on top of it. A lot of folks did it with that old corrugated, you know, steel and stuff. And the ones that didn't have these little homemade sheds built over them, they had so much tar and rubber had been put on top of that damn trailer, it looked like a racetrack up there. It's just thick. And you can see where it run off in places. Let's try and keep that damn water out. And as somebody who's done a lot of them jobs as a young man, I used to help Granny do it. That's a crap job to do right there, buddy. We used to have to do it with that old fifth wheel RV they had. It leaked like a sieve. And about once a season, me and Granny get up there with a bucket and a broom and brush that stuff on, try to keep it from leaking till next year. And I got up to his address. He had pulled the Dakota in the driveway, and he pushed some of the pine needles off of it, but it was still just, it looked like hell. It was streaked up with pine tar and resin from front to back. When we pulled in that driveway, about six kids run out that trailer in the driveway. You here for the truck? Yeah. Let me go get my daddy. All right. And the kid, most of that neighborhood was black folks, you know, but I was still so surprised when the dude that came around the house was a black dude that looked younger than me because of that voice I had heard on the phone. I mean, from the voice on the phone, I thought I was about to do business with Barry Corbin. You know, I did not picture this 20-something black dude come around the house in overalls. I was like, oh, crap, bro. You need to lay off cigarettes now, Bubba. He started talking. It was the same voice, country as hell, man. He told one of them kids, go in there and get my keys, you know. And them kids run off in that trailer, got the keys for the Dakota to come back out and brung him the keys. He said, man, you check it out. I said, yeah. Boy, let me tell you something. When I opened the door of that little pickup, that smell hit me. Only thing I can compare it to is, you know, last year I left some meat in the refrigerator during the hurricane. I'm telling you, when I opened the door of that truck, that smell hit me. I said, whoa, God, my. Yeah, I jumped back from it. He said, yeah, I don't know what that is. He said, I ain't used the truck in a little while. I said, boy, I can tell you what. It smelled like two polecats have been running a fight club in it. Run a dog off a gut pile, Bubba. And the interior wasn't in bad shape. You know, it wasn't torn. The seats weren't torn, nothing like that. Just dirty. Grease. Everything had a shade of grease on it. I forgot what he'd done. He told me he worked with heavy equipment, doing something with heavy equipment. But it was a dirty job, whatever it was. Everything in there just had a thin layer of grease stain on it, but nothing was jacked up. The door panels were good. Everything looked right. Had a little, I was missing the stereo. I ended up putting an aftermarket stereo in it. Stereo, it clearly somebody had an aftermarket unit in it and pulled it out. There's wires hanging out the dash. Normal stuff you see when you go buy pickup in a place where there's a trailer house. I ain't crapping on trailer. I grew up in a trailer. I've lived in trailers a lot in my life. I ain't crapping on them. But it's not usually a place of high fashion and high elegance. The whole extended cab was full of empty natural light beer cans. Just that whole back seat. There's a couple crushed boxes and a couple cardboard boxes. And then just, I'm telling you, natural light beer cans up the back of the seat like it was a holding tank. And the passenger floorboard had trash in it and fast food stuff and bags and old parts boxes. And just, you know, the kind of stuff you see in like a junkyard truck or a working man's truck sometime that don't keep up with it. And it was just piled up to the seat nearly level with the seat. Like that was just his extra trash can. But I tell you what, I choked enough of that smell down, turned the key, that little Magnum V6 fired right up, rubbed smooth. I checked odometer, sure enough. Every bit of 238,000 miles on that little truck. I said, man, boy, you mind if I take it for a spin? Go for it, Bubba. He didn't care. Knew I wasn't going to steal that truck. But I took it out there on the road behind Seven Coves there and run up and down the lake a little bit. It had plenty of power. Transmission shifted smooth. I thought the front end, a lot of times in old Dakotas, they get high miles. That front end gets real sloppy. My 91 was sloppy as hell. You know, we had to do all kind of tie rod ends, everything, tighten it up. But, boy, the front end was just tight on it. Still good, man. Thing pretty decent alignment. It had used tires all the way around, but they would pull straight going down the road. Only thing that screwed me up first time I drove is I hit the brakes on it. I was coming down a little lake road. I hit the brakes. The truck damn near turned sideways on me. I said, boy, what the shit? I knew something was screwed up with them brakes. Didn't hardly have any pedal, you know, any pedal resistance. And that thing lurched and jerked sideways on me. I said, boy. I turned it around. I took it back over there. Got it back in his driveway. I said, man, them brakes is a little touchy. He said, yeah, I paid my uncle to fix them. And they've been like that ever since. I don't know what that fool done. Back at a pickup full of pine needles and like six milk crates. Full of empty oil cans and parts cleaner, starter fluid, various junk, other parts from other cars. When I cleaned the bed of that truck out, I found an exhaust manifold for a Chevy 350 in there. Also found a throttle body injection of like an 87 Olds Cutlass. And I popped the hood. The engine was remarkably clean. Checked the oil. Oil a little rough looking. Crawled up underneath it there in the grass. Didn't look like transmission been leaking, anything like that. I couldn't see no leaks anywhere. And mostly looking at them little V6s, bad about front seal leaks. So got up under there, couldn't see anything. I went armed with some knowledge. But I had already decided, I'm going to be honest with you, I had decided from the minute I drove that little pickup, I was going to buy it. It drove too good. You know, aside from that brake problem, I'd already decided I was going to buy a pickup. It was in my budget. I could do it. I would have paid every bit of $600 for that truck. But I always got to try not to. I said, man, I'd like to have it. But I can't see $600 with them brakes all jacked up. Now, before you get your panties in a wad, this is a different time, bro. Trucks didn't have the value they have now. $600 for a little pickup in 2009 wasn't unheard of. So, man, I can't see $600 with them brakes all jacked up. You take $400 for it, and boy, he just, true East Texas fashion, he, him, hauled. Man, I sure feel better about $500. I was just kind of screwing with him. I said, I tell you what, I'll go $450, and I'll haul all that junk in the back off for you. Basically insinuating if I pay you $500 a truck, you're gonna clean the bed of this truck out before I leave here. He kind of laughed at me. He said, man, I'll take $450, but you ain't taking all my good milk crates. And he went over there in that truck, pulled about four of them milk crates full of junk out the back of that truck. And I wish to hell I knew how he made the decision which ones to keep, because they all looked like they was full of the same junk. But he's a good old hand, man. I gave him his money. He signed the title over for me. Had a clean title on it. Thing was still, it was registered. Had good registration on it for another 4 months. I called the insurance company. Got them put it on the insurance real quick for them. Get me a binder. We left there. That damn thing had just enough gas in it to get to the first gas station I could get to there in Willis. Filled it up. We started making our way back to Spring with it. Rachel followed me. Every time I hit them brakes, that thing would jump a lane, buddy. Other than that, the truck drove good. Didn't overheat. Air conditioner was blowing cold. I had the windows down trying not to gag to death. I got that thing to the house, immediately got it up on jack stand, started tearing into them brakes. Both back wheel cylinders. And as somebody who's done this trick before in an emergency, I immediately realized what had happened. But both back wheel cylinders, when I pulled wheels and the drums off, was blowed out, right? Just the seals was all dried up. Fluid, you can see where fluid had leaked out of them profusely at some point. And when I unhooked the brake line, both the brake lines on the back had a big old carpet tack stuck in them so he could create pressure to the front brakes. Got around the front of it, took front wheels off, and the right front caliper was seized open, rusted open with no pads in it. Just froze solid. And the only caliper was working was the left front caliper on the truck. And I had a little money left. I run over to O'Reilly's, bought a new caliper for that side of the truck. And some people are like, oh, you should have bought two. Yeah, I should have, but I'm broke hillbilly. I do what I got to do to get by. I bought me one good caliper, a set of pads, two wheel cylinders, set of shoes for the back drums, and the hardware kits come with all the little, the keepers and springs and all that good stuff. And I bought myself a cheap, it was the cheapest brake spring pliers I could find at the O'Reilly's in the little, one of those little aisles out there. Well, I got back house, I started rebuilding them drum brakes. Old Skip come over, bullshit with me, and Oh, Skip watched me use that cheap-ass O'Reilly's brake spring tool for about 15 minutes and snapped my fingers in it twice. He said, hold on. He goes over his house. He come back, got a real nice Matco set of brake spring pliers. I mean, these things was, ooh, they was fine. They clamped down. They had the little loop thing where you could twist it onto the keeper. Short work after he brought me them. Hell, by dark, I had an operational vehicle. By dark, I had them brakes. I took it for a test drive. That thing stop on a dime and do everything you wanted it to do after that. I had me good. I flushed all the brake fluid out through the system, rebled it, some fresh fluid. It got me excited. Next morning, boy, I got up. I scrubbed that pickup from head to toe. I went through two bottles of Goof Off getting all the damn pine resin on. But damn, if it wasn't a pretty good looking little pickup. It had a couple little scratches on it here and there. You know, somebody smacked up against it or something. Not like car wreck, but like somebody rubbed up against it with a belt buckle or been drove through the trees or something. But the paint was pretty solid. It was a good looking little pickup when I got it cleaned up. Start pulling all the trash out of it. And I found in the bottom of that passenger floorboard, once I got a couple layers of trash out, it was a paper sack. And it looked like at one time it had four oranges in it. But these oranges had changed physical states a number of times throughout their decomposition process. It was definitely the source of the smell. My God. Whew. I scrubbed the interior out, took some of that Resolve, shampooed the carpets. I shoved a new car smell, little pine tree shaped air fresheners. I shoved them in between the dash, I shoved them under the seats, everywhere I could put them things, tried to overpower that smell. Now, I'll be honest with you, it still took about a month before you get in that truck when it was hot outside and I gaggle a little, you know, just that little. But them oranges did a number. But all that grease cleaned up, it was a clean little pickup, man. I went and bought me a little aftermarket stereo, a little Kenwood deck, CD player. Set that up in there, had good speakers, good little pickup, man. I was damn proud of it. Now, I'd done all that work, cleaned it up, man. There's a certain satisfaction in that when you take something that's just been kind of neglected and put it back right. Change oil in it. I didn't mess with transmission fluid because I didn't know if it had ever been done. I was afraid if I changed transmission fluid in it, that truck would never move again. That's back when we had that little dog you've heard me talk about, my little Tina, little Jack Russell dog. And it had a little center console, and that dog loved it. She'd sit right on that center console while I drove that Dakota around on the weekends. And she'd run with me to the parts place and donut shop and all that kind of stuff. And it was like it was a seat made just for her. She looked like a little princess sitting on that seat, man. She also liked to hang her head out the window, you know, get a little air every once in a while. We did a lot of truck riding, me and Tina. That was her first. Oh, she liked riding that. I said, Tina, you want to go for a ride? Boy, she'd be at that door ready to go. Let's go. You go for a truck ride? Boy, she's at the door. Let's go. Let's go. That's her favorite thing to do. Good little pickup. Cold air conditioner. The Honda's air conditioner hadn't worked very good, so I was kind of getting spoiled. Now, this first vehicle I done had in a while. I had air. Before that, I was riding a motorbike. Ford Contour's air conditioner sucked. Only worked about half the time. Well, this first vehicle I done had some good air conditioning in a while. Well, I got a little spoiled by that. Good little drivetrain. Everything a fella needs to get busy working on a new contract. And we did some work, buddy. I used to drive I had that truck about just shy of a year. And if you think about it, where I lived in Spring, where my main job was during the week, was about just close 40 miles one way. So 80 miles a day on that little pickup. Already had 238,000 miles on 80 miles a day. You know, let's say 50 weeks. I mean, probably put another 4,000 miles on that truck, close to. I'm not good at math. One of you can do the math. But I was also on the weekends, I was out doing side job, remodeling jobs, stuff like that. Little things at first, you know, come repaint a bedroom for me. Come do this. Come do that. You know, just little stuff at first. Get my feet wet. Then my buddy David calls me up. He says, hey, man. He said, I've been looking to get a rental property. I bought this house over in Sharpstown. Hell, man. He said, why don't you go over there and look at it? Tell me what you charge to repaint it, all that kind of stuff. I was still kind of new in the business. I went over there, bid that job out to best of my abilities. I fell woefully short because I didn't realize the amount of work that place needed. Needed carpet all through it, and stairs, all that kind of stuff. I was going to have Home Depot come do the carpet. I ain't no carpet man. But this place was crazy, man. It was a good-sized house to begin with. But what we figured, Dave was like, you don't need to buy no paint. There's plenty of paint in the garage where the people was going to remodel it. And they didn't finish. Apparently, they'd had somebody working on the place, and they just didn't finish. And there were, sure enough, there's these 5-gallon buckets of white paint all out there in the garage. He said, you use all that paint. Of course, I didn't check it because I didn't know no better. I know how long that paint been sitting there. We got working on that house, though, trying to figure it out. It was like a 2-story house with this extra little level to it and like an extra loft level on top of it, made it a 3-story. And we got into working. We started pulling the carpet up in the upstairs and realized there was roofing shingles underneath it. Somebody literally just cut a hole in the roof of a 2-story house and built a 3rd level on top of it. This thing was crazy, man. Big damn house. I don't know how many months I worked on that house for David on the weekends. That's why I actually had to start hiring some help, you know, because the job was just a little bit bigger than what I could do, man. And so I was just hiring guys, you know, somebody say, oh, so-and-so needs a job, something like that. They'd tell me I'd put somebody to work. And every once in a while, I'd go pick up some day laborers to help me. I know we broke into that paint in that red house. Oh, my God, that was so inexperienced. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I broke open that paint and the oil had separated from the paint. So it all had to be mixed back up and God, it stunk to high heaven. I didn't know paint could go rancid like that. You know, you forget there's volatile organic components inside paint and less of them now, but back then it was quite a bit more and boy, paint stunk to high heaven. I remember I was in there spraying that house and that white and I painted about half the downstairs of the house, spraying it. Ran out of that stinky-ass paint, grabbed the other 5-gallon bucket, it was labeled exact same, hooked it up. Didn't find out until it dried they were different shades of paint, so then I had all this crazy overspray of wrong shade. So I had to go back and respray Then we had to go buy some more paint and respray over all that because that old stink paint still stunk when it was on the wall. That job was a disaster. David hung with me through the whole damn thing, boy. Absolute disaster of a job. That house was so jacked up. And one day, I hired this dude based off somebody else's recommendation. He was lived kind of over close to that property I worked at in Conroe, out in the sticks. And somebody said, "Man, this guy needs some work. He's kind of down on his luck, lost his job." You know the story. And you always want to go, "Man, he's a white dude. He looks like he's in his late 20s. He didn't look methy. He wasn't missing teeth, that kind of stuff. But I could tell he had partied a little harder than maybe some of his other peers. But one day we was over there at the house. I handed him my keys and about 30 bucks or so, cash money. And I said, "Hey, man, run down to that little corner store down to the neighborhood. Fill this cooler up with ice, get some Gatorades and some water for everybody." I had about 4 or 5 guys out there working. My brother Joey, in the beginning, Joey was kind of teamed up with me on the business, but he decided it wasn't for him. We was in deep, and we weren't making any money on the job, and I think it turned in a little more than what he was wanting to do. You know, he was just looking for something, getting a little exercise. That's fun on the weekends, and I'm a hard person to work for. So we were bumping heads, that kind of thing, and I gave him an out, and he took it, and we parted ways on that little business, and it was for the best. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, and he sure the hell did, and I was out there by myself trying to ride. I was out there with those 4 or 5 guys. This one dude, I sent him off the store to get water and ice for everybody. And I see him drive off down the road and we go back to working. Boy, 20, 30 minutes go by. Where is this dude? Damn, boy. Go out there and look. And I can see almost all the way down there to that store. I can't see that little Dakota in the parking lot nowhere. And I started going, "Oh, hell." But the dude had a cell phone, so I tried to call his cell phone. He don't answer his cell phone. I started getting worried because at the time I had my little 9mm was off in the console. And also everybody's payroll, the cash, pay everybody was in the console. I said, "Man, this dude done robbed me, done took my damn truck. I done screwed up." So I sent the other guys back to work. I called police. Back then, Sharpstown had their own police, and Sharpstown police officer come over there. And I said, "Man, I don't even know the damn license plate tag on the truck." I said, "Here's what the little pickup looks like." Da-da-da-da. I sent my helper down that little store. He ain't down there, and I can't get him to answer his phone and find him. Nowhere, no how. He said, "Man, I can't promise you anything. We'll put a little lookout for it, see if we can run across him." It was about 2 hours later, I got a call from them people. I was trying to figure out how I was going to get home, you know. I was like, I was going to have to call David. He didn't give me a ride back to damn Spring, Texas. I was freaking out, you know. I had to call Rachel, tell her my truck I just bought, put all that money and time in, got stolen. And then Sharpstown police officer called me. He said, "We found your truck, man." He said, it's just right down the street from where you're at. And I said, "Well, man, is it walking distance?" He said, yeah, man, it's in that same neighborhood. He gave me the cross streets where it was. I told guys, I said, "Well, can I walk over there and get it?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "But we're finishing up an investigation." I said, "Oh, shit." I said, "Is any of my stuff still in the truck?" He said, "What kind of stuff are you talking about?" I said, "I got a 9mm, little Smith & Wesson 9mm, little Sigma." And it was a 40 cal, not a 9mm, little Smith & Wesson 40 cal. Sitting in the console, and I got an envelope in there, got about $600 in it. That's my payroll for everybody. He said, "All that's still in the truck." He said, "That's yours?" I said, "Yeah, that's mine. That belongs to me." I said, "That gun's back them days. Not saying I don't now, but that particular gun was registered to me because I bought it brand new at Academy and registered it. My first new gun purchase I'd ever made. He said, yeah, man. Don't forget it. Oh, I forgot one of them guys, one of them dudes had a car, had a little Geo Metro. Some of them had rode the jobs out in. And he gave me a ride over there real quick, dropped me off and get over there. And there's about three or four of them cop cars around. And they got old boy in the back of one of them cop cars with cuffs on him. But he looks out of it though. I can't figure out what's going on. Long story short, they got talking cop. He said, yeah, he said, we just drive around, kind of keep an eye out. And he said, this old boy's parked over here with a spike hanging. I said, what? He said, yeah, he said, he must have took that 30 or 40 bucks you gave him to go get drinks and stuff and run over here and got somebody to sell him something. And when they rolled up on him, he was asleep in the truck. Done shot himself up, I guess, some hair on, you know. God damn, look at that. That moron stole my truck. Dave Rogers, there's a loaded gun in there and an envelope full of money. They gave me my stuff back. And I cranked the truck up, drove back to the job site. We finished the day out. I got pulled over with this back when my license was still suspended, too. I got pulled over with it one night. I'll never forget. I was coming back to Conroe, coming back to Springs about 8 o'clock at night. I was dead dog on my ass, tired. I've been working. I'd been bleaching buildings and pressure washing them all day. So I just smelled like bleach and death and mildew and was just soaking wet and tired. And had all my equipment in the back of the truck strapped down. I was running down 2978, and I guess I thought I was maybe I was speeding a little bit. Old sheriff deputy runs by me going north, and I see him, boy, hit the brakes and dive and turn around and come back behind me. I said, boy, goose is cooked tonight. He pulled me over and jumped there and I need your license. I said, I got insurance, this registration, all that stuff. I said, I'm going to tell you right now, my license is suspended. He said, what's it suspended for? I said, out-of-state tickets. I lied a little bit. Out-of-state tickets. He said, what are you doing about that? I said, I'm working on it. I said, but I gave him the whole spiel about how I was dealing with Louisiana, and they were still telling me the computers was down from a hurricane that happened 5 years ago. And he just kind of laughed. He was an old-timer. He kind of laughed. He said, yeah, they're bad about that, you know. He said, where are you headed, bud? I said, I'm just going home, man. I'm just going home, try to get a good night's sleep. I got to come right back up this road tomorrow. So if you let me go tonight, you're probably going to have to pull me over tomorrow because now you know the story. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, you promised me you're working on getting this license thing fixed up? I said, yes, sir. He said, you don't look like you're causing no harm. You don't look like you have to do nobody no bad good. He said, I'm going to let you go, but on the way home, stop by the auto parts store, get you a bulb for that. You got a brake light out back here, a tail light out back here. Yes, sir. That's what got me pulled over. Bad. And these days, for all those years of driving dirty like that, these days, I don't even get in a car without checking the lights. That little tail light almost cost me. And true story, I got a buddy that went to prison because of a bad brake light. I mean, that's not why he went to prison, but that's what got him thrown in prison. I mean, that was the thing that broke his probation and got him screwed up with the law. Well, probably the robbery is what got him screwed up with the law to begin with. But anyways, that's a story for another day. He let me go. He said, I'll give you some grace. I realize you're just working, dude. He said, you know, look like you're under the influence, anything, cause no problems, I'll let you go. He let me go that night, dude. Let me slide. Same as Officer Langan. And Officer Langan let me slide, man. And I would see him every morning on the way back to work. He'd be on the side of 2978. I'd wave at some bitch every time I drive. It's me. Don't pull me over. That's one of the craziest things. That was my first business account, and I set my business account up at Bank of America. And in order for me to tell you the story, I got to give you a little context. So up in Conroe, there's a street called Longmire Road. And apparently one of the first families that settled that area or lived in that area when it was becoming a town was Longmire family. Not any direct relation to me, but weird to see my name somewhere else. I don't have a name that you see a lot of places unless you're up in Washington. There's Longmire Park and a bunch of stuff up there who is a dude that is an offshoot of our family. But I don't ever see my name anywhere else. You know, I've never met anybody. It's real rare I meet folks with my last name. It's not like a Smith or, you know. So up there in Conroe, they got all this stuff named Longmire. There's all this family named Longmire. And there's still a whole bunch of that family left in town. And a lot of them got money or well-to-do. That's how I know they're not from my family. But there's another sect of them on the other side of the tracks out there in Cut and Shoot that ain't got as much money, ain't as well-to-do, and sometimes involves themselves in nefarious businesses. When I got my first business bank account at Bank of America, of course, I was just trying to stay afloat. I was having to hire all these helpers. So I'd get a check. I'd go up to the bank. I'd drop it in my account. But then I'd pull most of it out in cash so I could go pay my, you know, I was paying day labor, stuff like that. And I didn't really trust banks. So I've been doing this a couple months. I didn't know the government watched your bank account. I didn't know because all 9/11 that people watch your bank account, look for you doing nefarious stuff. I didn't know they did none of that. I didn't know nothing about no banking. Well, apparently me putting $5,000 or $6,000 in the bank in checks and then pulling it all out was raising some, I think at the time it was like more than $5,000, was raising some eyebrows. I drove that little pickup over there at Bank of America one Tuesday morning right there in Conroe. And it's right there at I think it's right there at Longmire Road, or pretty close to. I pulled up there in Bank of America and walked off in there to do my business. I had a check I needed to deposit, and I was going to pull some cash, write myself a cashier's check, pull some cash out, and got up to the teller with my check, and she said, "Oh, sir, they need to talk to you in the office." In the office? What the hell for? She said, "Well, there's something going on in your account. There's a note here that we have to direct you to financial office." So, sure enough, some dude in a suit comes over. "Mr. Longmire, I'd like you to come with me." All right. I go over there, sit in his office. I said, what's the deal? He said, give us just a little bit. We just want to talk to you about the activities of your account. I think somebody done wrote me a hot check or something. I can't figure out what the hell's going on. I ain't sitting there too long, about 30, 40 minutes, and two DEA officers walk in, like in their gear, the bulletproof vest, and, you know, it says DEA on it. And I, you know, I was guilty of having a little weed in the truck from time to time. I think we had to get the DEA involved. They come there, "You, Jerry Longmire, yes, sir, you got some identification." I pull my ID out, give them an identification. I said, what's the problem? We'll get that here in a little bit. What did you drive here today?" I said, "Well, it's a little green 94 Dodge Dakota sitting out there in the parking lot." He said, "Sir, we'd like to take a look around your truck if you don't mind." I said, "Well, I kind of mind, but it don't seem like I got much choice." And I gave him the keys. And they went out. I will say, very politely, went through my truck. They didn't make a mess. And, you know, truck was pretty clean. Wasn't a lot for them to go through. They, of course, found my pistol. And, you know, a little cash. I'm bad about keeping cash in my console. They come back in. They wanted to ask me all kind of questions about my business, kind of work I was doing while I was getting so many checks from so many different people. So I took them through the spiel, told them about how I was going to start my own little business, all this, that kind of stuff. "You got any kind of receipts for the people you've been paying?" "Well, no, I don't have nothing like that, I don't reckon. You know, I pay these people cash. They work for me." "How well," I don't remember the names, "but how well do you know this guy Longmire and this guy Longmire?" I said, "I ain't never heard of them people in my life." He said, "Well, your last name's Longmire." And you, was like, yeah, but I said, these Longmires in Conroe, I ain't related to. I don't know any of them. And they're, oh. Come to find out, these two brothers named Longmire was over there in Cutshoot, been running a little meth lab and was cooking and selling and running that sort of business. And these guys just immediately suspected when I started moving all this cash in out of my account that I was moving cash for them. I said, well, I don't know these people, nothing alive. I don't know nothing about them. They said, well, we went through your truck. It's clean. You got a pistol, but that's okay. You know, you're allowed to have that. I said, yeah. Bank manager apologized to me. He said, but, you know, this is what got their attention was pulling this much cash out. You need to find a better way to run your business. That kind of stuff. And he set me up with a little different account, a little more of a business account. End up letting me go on my way after about 2 hours of grilling and to find out that I was the wrong Longmire. But I was full. I ain't gonna lie to you. I ain't gonna lie, boy. You have to be a fool to tell you what. I was scared as shit. I thought they had called the DEA in on a joint. You know, I just thought my goose was cooked. Had that little truck about a year, put a shit ton of miles on it. But it just got to be where it wasn't enough to do what I was needing to do for the next step of my business growing. I took on that big boardwalk job at the property, rebuilding all that boardwalk with that marine grade lumber. In the beginning, before I got smart enough to start ordering it in bulk and having it delivered, I was just going over there and, boy, I didn't know that marine grade lumber is going to be so much heavier than regular lumber, you know, but it's a little more, it's got more chemicals in it. It's heavier wood. I remember I loaded that Dakota up one day, come out of 84 lumber over there at Conroe, looked like I was bouncing wheelies going down the road. Miracle I got that pickup back to property of that wood. I said, boy, I gotta do something a little better than this. I knew I was gonna have to move up 3/4 ton. I was having to rent heavy equipment every once in a while, and they won't even let you hook up a trailer or put a piece of equipment on a trailer over there at the United Rental unless you got a 3/4 ton truck or other little place I used to use. I can't remember the name of it right now. Little green building. Don't matter. Sunbelt. I was doing a lot of renting from Sunbelt. I was friends with everybody at the Sunbelt. I knew them all. So, y'all know that story. I put that little pickup for sale. Sold it about $1,000. And I suspect the old boy bought it. Still driving it around somewhere. You know, it was a good, clean little truck. May have upgraded to it. But I can tell you this. All the time I owned that truck, the only thing I ever done to it was in brakes. I don't think I ever had to fix anything else on that little pickup. I think I had to fix the windshield wiper. I think I had to change the windshield wiper motor, maybe. That was it. I'm not even sure if that was that truck. That might have been that Ford. I sold it. I went and bought a 91 F-250, which was the worst truck I ever owned in my freaking life. That little Dakota did everything I asked to do. Good ass little truck. Pretty good on gas. I wish I had it now, to be truthful. That would be the perfect size little pickup to have in my situation now. A lot of good memories being damn old Tina riding around on Saturday mornings. Let's do some testimonials. We got some unwrapping to do. Let's do some unwrapping, man. We got some packages at the P.O. box this week. This one right here. I'm going to shake it too much. Sounds like it might be. Some Hot Wheels. You know what? I don't think this is my package. This is not my package. This is my wife's package. Got the wrong name on it. Well, I have to open them other Hot Wheels up next week. I don't have them out here. I must have grabbed the wrong box. That's my bad, John. Or whoever sent them. We'll find out. Damn, I can't believe I've done that. We'll open them next week. But we did get this little package from our dear friend of the show, Amy Iris, out there in California. And she always sends me nice emails. And she has been a follower of the show for a while. And we're happy to have her as one of the original fan base of the show, and she wrote me a really beautiful letter right after I started the show, and I'd be lying if I didn't say that letter didn't influence a lot of the way the rest of the show went, because it made me realize that I was on something real. Maybe I'll have a pop thing on it. Got a little letter here. Oh, a handwritten letter. That's even better. Dear JW, I've been wanting to send you a thoughtful token of my appreciation for some time now. When the Wrecking Yard podcast started, none of us could have ever imagined the stories you were to unfold were stories we all could share in and feel a sense of camaraderie, no matter who we are or where we come from. In a time when we are subjected to so much mean-spirited behavior, you remain a light of hope and remind us we have possibilities in this life. Be kind. Have an open heart. There's room for all of us at the table. There's room for all of us at the table. What you have done with the Wrecking Yard podcast is so very special. And since day one, we've experienced a rare and wonderful happening. I thank you for your dedication, all the laughs, all the tears, and working hard to deliver your fans cherished mementos of your life's experiences. With love and gratitude, Amy Harris. That's very very nice. Ooh, what do we got here? A shirt. Let's see. Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. What's it? Oh, shit. Look at this. This is a Trip Day Oneer on the front. And then on the back, it's got the whole first season. All the vehicles from first season. Man, that's cool. Amy, that's cool shit. It's even 2X. Let's, you know what? Let's give it a shot. That's what I think. Hell yeah. Feels good. You see all my cars and stuff back there? I love it. Thank you. This is beautiful. I love this. Thank you so much, Amy. That's really thoughtful. Let's see what else we got. I think we got another little envelope here. Oh, this got some artwork on it. 5-3. Red too shiny. Get up close, y'all see it. A little artwork. And what we got here? Mr. Longmire, first of all, big fan. As a proud Appalachian, your work really hits home. I think we've likely been in the same trailer with a 150-quart Coleman cooler in front of the TV in lieu of a couch, even if we're thousands of miles away. That said, I read a comment you left on the Book of Faces saying you've thought about writing for the funny books. And there's a little cartoon here. Nobody says you can't, JW. The panels help you pace your jokes, so the punchline lands right on target. Or you confuse people because they can't hear your vocal tone or emphasis. Easy. Comics are far from a dead medium. We need funny people more than ever now. Keep on making people laugh. And he must be some kind of cartoonist because he drew me a beautiful little example of how to pace out a cartoon joke. And it's really well done. That's cool, man. I don't know what your name is. I wish I knew what your name was. Dally? Daly? I can't tell. Man, that's cool. That's real cool, man. Thank you. I like that. Next week we'll have some Hot Wheels to drive. Well, let's get these testimonials. Look, testimonials, if you will. Man, I watched about an hour of Dusty Rhodes this morning. I got, there's a page called Dusty Rhodes No Context, and I got hung up on that page for an hour just watching Dusty Rhodes promos. It was one of the ones that made me laugh the most is when he said, "He's the taking names has been done. Now the Heine kicking about to stop." And it's going to go on all summer. It's going to be hot, hot, hot in public, if you will. Oh, he tickles me. I love it, dude. Loved him. Let's see here. At Jack Franklin, friction rash, better known as the chub rub. Chub rub. I like that. I was talking about having them sat in a wet suit too long, rashes big boys get. Yeah, I was on my cough down. I'm going to call it chub rub. Got a little chub rub going on. At Texasipian, have a kid and you'll grow up as crazy. I know some kids that pass the parents on the growing up scale. Bubba, you and me both. You and me both, son. Yeah, now that I'm older, I realize how stupid that phrase is. But I heard that phrase a bunch growing up. At Midland 53, we just celebrated our little boy's first birthday last week, and this episode hits hard. You're right. A huge part of fatherhood is wanting your child to be proud of the man he looks up to. I may not be perfect, but I'm better than what my dad was, and that's enough. Also, you're right about waiting to tell people until 12 weeks because of potential for a miscarriage. Not sure why, but at 12 weeks, chances drop significantly. Yeah, I knew it was something like, I couldn't remember. Man, thank you, dude. And best of luck to you in fatherhood. You're back at the beginning right now, but boy, I tell you, it goes fast. About a week from now, you're going to be looking for cars for them. The way it feels to me. Ah, this has been a fun episode to do. I wasn't even sure about doing this one. That little truck had more stories than I realized it did. I've already told a bunch of them, and I started digging around. I think about that little Dodge truck and that time of rates, you know, right before we had kids, and that little dog whose whole soul seemed poured into the simple act of riding beside me. For the complications of being parents. What I really think about is how I was always in such a rush to get to the next thing. Working crazy hours, make some scratch. Trying to build something that would outlast me. Hoping folks would look at me and see more than just a man who tells jokes. I remember this property owner telling me this like it was a prophecy. He said, I just have a hard time spending this kind of money with you because I know you're a comedian. You know, I figure it's just a matter of time before you hang this up and go back to it. Showed you, friend. I wasted another 10 years doing the wrong things for me. Before I finally listened to that voice that had been whispering all along. I wish I'd stayed longer in that space. Just still. Letting the world slow down around me. Wish I'd taken that little dog on twice as many truck rides. Her ears in the wind. Eyes bright as a street light. I wish I'd spent more time in that space seeing my wife for the miracle she is and feeling, enjoying the gift of our freedom in those days. I reckon I've been guilty most of my life of just rushing headlong towards the next chapter. And that's one of those chapters I wish I'd lingered in a little bit for all it was. Struggle, yeah. You know, a struggle ain't always a curse. Sometimes it's the forge where you learn who you are. What you're capable of enduring. What you're capable of becoming. And some of you are probably in struggle right now. There's an end to it. And then after that, there'll be another struggle. I think that's all this is. Just a series of different struggles, different layers of complexity and need. I don't make a bunch of money right now. Have to scrap and get by. But I'm trying not to rush right now. I'm trying to enjoy this moment, this pocket I'm in. I think my life's about to get quite a bit more complicated and there's going to be a more complex struggle. So I'm trying to enjoy this chapter. I hope hope your struggles end sooner than later. But I hope you pay attention to the place you're in right now. Nothing else might make you appreciate the next place you're in. Or just give you something nice to think about when the next place is a little too much of a struggle. I want to see y'all succeed. I tell you this every week. I'm going to tell you until you believe it. There's room at the table for everybody, and I'm rooting for you. I'm JW, and I love you. Boyle Amherst, trip day wonder. I love that. That is a well, that brought a smile to my face.